We are looking at the Bullitt industrial case, and the moderator for this program is Ellen Ridgestone. Ellen is a full-time professional director with experience of boards of companies ranging from microcap to Fortune 500. Her industry experience includes both operating experience and board experience, includes biotech, consumer products, financial services, industrial, power, pharmaceuticals. She's been involved with computer hardware and software, semiconductors, telecom, and networking. Ellen is a former private company CEO. She's also a former Fortune 500 CFO. Ellen is currently on the boards of three public companies. She chairs the audit committee on all three. In addition to her public company board work, Ellen sits on the board of directors of the National Association of Corporate Directors New England chapter. She is an NACD Board Leadership Fellow. This is the highest award given by the NACD for corporate governance. Ellen also received the first annual Distinguished Director Award from the American College of Corporate Directors in 2013. For purposes of this case, Ellen is going to be chair of the board of the Bullitt Company, and you are on the board.
Ellen. All right. Well, it's good to see everyone again. We haven't been together for a couple months, so here we are in beautiful downtown Detroit at our board meeting. So we have, in preparing for today's board meeting, just like all of you do in the reading, I sort of look at the things we have to talk about as a board in two categories. One, which is sort of the business issues, and the other, which is the process issues. So let me pose a question, because I think we're in executive session now. Our CEO is not here. We all know the situation we have. We're a billion-dollar plus company, but mid-cap. We're under a lot of pressure from shareholders because our stock price has not been performing. At the same time, we did a transformational M&A deal last year, which doubled the size of the company, so made us a multi-billion-dollar company. A lot of design-in products. Products are doing well, so we don't have any major operational issues. But clearly, we're not getting enough of the, you know, we can always grow faster. The industry is in a challenged position, and clearly, we don't have very happy shareholders. So my first question to, I'd like to get us talking about it, because I'd like to understand where each of us is. We have some decisions we're going to be making. The CEO is going to come in. He's going to present us with some cases to spend a lot of money on new products and capital investments so that we can build the company for the long term. So what I'd like to do is start with the conversation, which is, where are each of you now? And we'll come back and have an executive session at the end of our day and a half boards listening to management to see if we're in the same place. But just to get a touch of where are you all at this point in terms of, do you think it's the right answer to invest for the long term? Should we be more focused on the short term and given the position of some of our major shareholders? What is your viewpoint at this stage? You're the board.
I'll jump in.
Bob, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm a little worried about market outlook and going, our business is fundamentally designed in, and it's going to take us several years to get money back. Product life cycles are moving faster, in which case our customers aren't happy because they want to commit to shorter life cycles because their customers' requirements are getting to be shorter. This year's cell phone is not going to be next year's cell phone, as an example. So I'm worried about the structural change coming at us and the kind of where we are with the business in terms of actually how we make money and generate our revenues and our profits. Mm-hmm. And being a public company actually doesn't help us in many ways. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple of concerns that I have that make it more challenging in the future for us than less challenging, frankly, now I'm curious what other people think, but that's my read so far.
Yep. Thoughts? Chris?
Two things. Number one, you say, you know, I would want to understand better the competitive situation and you know, what has been sort of like the track record of the management on previous investments. Are those financial, you know, metrics associated with investment attractive? And, you know, how good is the track record of, you know, the management? And then, you know, what is the strategic, you know, situation of the company and where do you move the needle? And, you know, this would be sort of like one set of issues. The other set of issues is, you know, I think that we are dealing with the financial markets that mispriced debt. Sort of like opportunistic situation to think about you know, leverage and you know, maybe you know some distribution to shareholders, and I think that those two are connected because you know, either one sort of, you know, takes away from the other.
Okay, other thoughts? Mindy, what do you think?
I'm a little concerned about making investments in R&D in terms of the marketplace and understanding how much it will take. What we need to do, and if in fact they will prove to be successful, because things have changing in the market so quickly. That's one of my concerns. I'm also concerned about whether or not the company has the wherewithal and is using us appropriately as board members, and will take our input. I mean, you know, we've had some decision making that hasn't been so great.
So where do you think focus for a second on that. Are there specific areas you're thinking of that we should be providing some additional guidance in that you're thinking of?
Well, I think we need to have a better understanding of their use of their resources. And if their stock price has been sort of languishing, is that...
Meaning capital resources?
Yeah.
Use of capital resources. Yeah.
A long product cycle. It looks like it takes a long time to get the products out there. And how are we relying on one or two customers? I don't know what the customer base looks like, and I think we maybe need to know that.
So the customer base is, for Bullard Industries, is 90% of the automotive manufacturers in the world.
So it's really dependent upon them and how well they do.
So it's a large customer base and a large percentage of the aftermarket. So it's the distribution side too for this particular company.
And Ellen, you mentioned earlier we did this massive acquisition that doubled the size of the company. Mm. Maybe a little bit more insight in terms of what was the strategic thinking? Why did we feel an imperative to go do such a big acquisition? What were some of the KPIs for that? We talk about our business and the model, meaning there's a lot of capital you got to put in. It takes time to get a return on that capital. So what were the fundamentals as to why we bought what we bought? And is that delivering on our expectations or not towards the growth? Because one would say if we're still flat, you know, did we anticipate other things were going to occur with that acquisition that maybe did not?
Actually, the acquisition is wildly successful, but that we can come back to that topic.
Okay. But
we could come back to that topic because it's more to the story. But that's the short bottom line. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
Your first question was really where are we optimizing short term versus long? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds clear that there have been some or are expected to be some real changes. There's talk about digital disruption and blockchain and software and IoT and things that maybe haven't been core expertise of the company. So it's a bit difficult to say yay or nay with regard to support of individual investments without understanding a bigger picture of how do all these things fit for the next couple of product cycles, the next 5 or 8 or 10 years.
So let me ask you a question. So because this is what we're going through now is typical really of what my executive committees do, which is here are some issues, let's get our thoughts out and then listen to management team and then see where we are at the end. So my question to you is, are there particular concerns, because you're, you know, that you have that we should note down as we're going through our session?
Well, I would say these new thrusts, right, the software on this list, the IoT, the connectivity, the digital things that sound as if they've not been strong in our history.
Yep.
I think we ought to hear more about the management plan to address those going forward over the next couple of product cycles. And if that feels solid, then leaning into at least a couple of those with a longer view might make some sense. But if that's feeling a little squishy, I'd be more inclined to optimize for the short term for now and build some strength into that strategic plan that would create some more confidence in longer cycle investments.
Okay.
Just given what you said about automotive,
I'm sorry. This is an industrial company, so I'm just, yes.
I thought that you mentioned that there.
A lot of the customers are automotive suppliers.
I would be concerned about sort of like where do we stand vis-a-vis the cycle?
Mm-hmm.
Because automotive is an immensely cyclical business, especially in the OEMs. Can we get a better handle about what to expect? It would be number one. Number two is, what is our contingency plan if something, if that something happens in the foreseeable future?
Yep. I'm sorry, Ed, you hadn't spoken yet. Yep.
Coming back to your point a few minutes ago, when you have a board process where you have an executive committee that listens to management, then gets together, then goes back to management with its issues, it strikes me that the main issues are around this sort of financial performance of the company. I mean, when I start reading whether the company has enough cash to sustain itself, it would seem to me that as a board, we need to hear management tell us, with some confidence that they are sustainable in the near term. So, as a board member, I would want to have management come in and convince us that they have a plan to continue to sustain the business, for at least the next year. And I'd want to really understand the elements of that plan. If they can't sustain the business, or we're not confident as a board that they have a plan to sustain the business, then a lot of these other things to me are kind of secondary. I mean, they're very important issues, but first and foremost, the business has to sustain itself. I'd also like to understand this matter of why the stock is sort of lagging. I have heard other companies have that issue, but I'm not sure the analysis of how this company compares to its peer group, and that type of thing has really been fully vetted. So I don't always jump to the conclusion that a stock in a company is not performing well in the market without a lot of analysis.
So let me just give you another piece of input, though. I didn't mean to imply there wasn't good cash flow here. It's just there's always more demands for what you do with cash than, and it's and in a large industrial like this one, the demands are, do you give a bigger dividend? Do you invest more in the plants? Do you do something in between? Do you focus on just driving EBITDA so that you can get your stock price up? I mean, there's choices here because you never have enough cash. But the company, let me just step back, and we're one board here, is based on the numbers we've all read this weekend before our board meeting, you can see we've got healthy cash flow. It may not be what we want it to be or enough to do everything, so we clearly have to make choices. But this isn't about a concern about the company not being in business. It's a decision about choice.
So what is management's recommendation?
Well, we're going to be, you've read the board package like I've read the board package, right? So we're going to be hearing them, and it's clear that they want to invest for the future. So that's based on the materials that we read this weekend. So that's why I think it's good for us to get these questions out here so we can all be hearing what everyone is thinking. And then after our meeting with management, let's make sure we cover these and then come back. I'm sorry, there are other people who haven't spoken. Jim.
So that in the, we're obviously going to have to satisfy the investors' needs for, you know, short term, their short term needs. We were saying that this investment that they've made recently is wildly successful.
Done very well.
Is that already baked into the stock price already? And if it
well, we come back to our numbers. We're a public company. Our numbers are out there. And we give a full year forecast. We don't give a quarterly forecast. So within a range, it's out there, right?
So then, despite the fact that it's been wildly successful,
we don't give independent views. We don't publicly disclose how the particular acquisition did.
Right. I'm just kind of curious why that hasn't translated into a wildly successful, you know, stock price, and that would be one of my concerns.
So we should spend some time with management on that.
Yeah.
We should spend some time. Yeah, I'm sorry.
If the acquisition has done extremely well, does that also imply that the rest of the business has deteriorated?
Yeah, that's my point.
Well, I think if we think about the materials we looked at this weekend, it's clear that the industry that we sell into is having issues, and there's an expectation of continued softness in the industries we sell into. But I think that's why management has recommended that we have a whole segment on investor relations at the board meeting.
You also mentioned that we're in heavily automotive, but also in aerospace and material sciences. And do we need to diversify a little? Is that essentially why the stock price is discounted?
Yep.
Because of the cyclical exposure.
Yep.
And then the other thing we need to think about is if we've got really good cash flow and a depressed stock price, then become a target of a raider.
The outlook of the market for automotive, it looks like it could be going through a major structural change, not just cyclical. That's my worry, at least from everything that I read.
Yep.
And leave aside all the stuff associated with pollution control and, you know, Volkswagen and all those problems, because they were all doing it. But I think we're looking at global structural change for the industry.
That's certainly some of the materials that's out there.
It's not a good picture for us at 90% of our business. So what are the businesses are we going to go after, and how quickly can we get in them? And is there a possibility to shorten our cycles? Because if we have a five-year cycle, and the cycle in the market for buying the products is three, we got a problem.
Yeah, a couple folks have mentioned the cycle. I'm sorry, I can't remember.
It's okay. I guess when I think about an industrial company and the capital allocation strategy that you just put forth, I think that our shareholder base owns us for all three of the things. And we demonstrated last year with the acquisition that we were sound capital deployers. And I think the big question that I have as we sit through these meetings the next couple of days is help us understand the new product pipeline, the commercialization time to the market, and how that translates into revenue over the next 5 years.
Well said. Well said. Okay, other thoughts? Okay. All right, so I've kept my list, and so as we go through these meetings for the next 2 days, we just need to make sure that we've touched base on them. So thank you for this. And we'll come back to them tomorrow afternoon after our next 2 days of board meetings. So on a process side, let me just ask a few questions. We've had some pushback from the audit committee. You know, let's see, who doesn't happen to be in the room right now? So off getting a drink or something. Who says that we keep putting things on the audit committee and not enough things are being done at the full board level. So my question is, you know, are there topics that when you think about board versus audit committee, how you might want to differentiate? So for example, one of the things the audit committee complained about, or at least the audit chair complained about to me, or gave me input, is that they spend a lot of time on working through the cash flow of the company. But because of all these trade-offs we're doing, and we're thinking about, you'll notice that in your main board package, you've got essentially the duplicate presentation. So the audit committee chair has said it doesn't make sense for the audit committee to go through the cash flows and then the full board, because in actual fact, you know, there's four people on the audit committee, and despite this larger room, we only have eight people on the board. So four people are hearing the same presentation twice. So the audit committee chair is suggesting that some topics that are essentially duplicative or need to be done at the, that the full board wants in-depth knowledge on, that maybe we should just do at the full board. And cash flow is, cash flow forecasting is one of those subjects. How do you all feel about it, and are there other topics you might think of that should either be clearly in the audit committee box or clearly in the let's do it at the full board because we all want to be involved?
I think some of these have to be at the full board.
I'm sorry?
Some of these, like budget and cash flow, the forecast has to be done at the full board level, because if they want to make a strategic decisions, they need to know this.
I'm sorry, which ones do you want at the full board?
The
budget?
Full budget, cash flow, the forecast, the balance sheet, and P&L. All of those, the full board needs to be completely aware of those in order to make decisions, strategic decisions. So, you know, it doesn't make sense to put all of this on, you know, repeat them again. So I would say this should be done at the full board.
Okay, so what would you put solidly, other than the SEC reporting, what would you put in the audit committee side?
Operational aspects like security.
So you would put cybersecurity in the audit committee?
Security for the entire company, you know, it has to be done at the audit committee. So it has to be reported to the audit committee, and they need to look at that. All the aspects of disaster recovery issues, the things that are issues that could happen with the company that needs to have supervision, IT security, IT governance, all the SEC, this needs to be done at the audit committee.
So let me ask a question, because you know, we have historically done cybersecurity review at the full board. That's the way we've just done it for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years. Do you guys, what, guys, generic guys, gals and girls, guys, do you guys want to move it to the audit committee? I'm fine with that. I mean, remember, the audit committee is trying to get rid of things, not get more things. Mm-hmm. What would you guys like?
I'd like to see it get melded into an enterprise risk management oversight, and have the audit committee lead that.
I agree with that.
I think they're coming together pretty rapidly, and a lot of companies are going in that direction, so let's just go there.
If you look at the top of page 2, I would distinguish between what's strategic in nature for the business versus what's more regulatory or compliance related. And I agree with you, cybersecurity comes under risk, enterprise risk management, but I think digital disruption as well as blockchain are more strategic types of areas that the full board might want to participate in. But the other elements should be more at the audit committee.
Does everyone agree with that? Because that is a change. That moves things from the full board into the audit committee. Well, we know you do, but let's see. Does anyone have a difference of opinion before we? I mean, there's no right, one right answer, right?
It can be moved over so long as there's a full report to the board.
Absolutely.
One of the things that we're hearing at the NACD, where Ellen is very involved, programs, so there's a cybersecurity program every year, is how important it is for the board to be fully informed on these issues because of the liability. So while the committee, I think, can do a lot of the work, you know, make sure that, you know, that you deal with all of the risk officers in the company, the board really has to be fully aware of what's going on in order for them to fulfill their responsibility. That's my
Okay, all right, yes.
One practical suggestion, would we ever consider inviting the other four board members to audit or observe the audit committee meeting so that our time as a board is spent much more on strategy rather than forecasting cash flow numbers?
So what we have, so let me put this out. It's a very interesting point. We used to invite the full board to all the committee meetings. And then if you came, you came. Obviously, there were the people who were formerly on the committee. We can go back to that if we want to do that. So we line them up. I mean, as you all realize, what we've got is we've got the audit committee followed by the comp committee, followed by the next morning non-gov, and then we spend a long day on the full board issues. If everybody came in time, they could certainly attend all the committees, even if they're not on. Is that what you guys would like to do? I mean, that's an easy change. It just means folks who aren't on the audit committee need to come in 3 or 4 hours earlier. You guys wanting to do that? I got one no over here. We'll take a poll.
I'll second the no.
You'll second the no.
All right. I think it depends on the size of the board. I think, how many board members are here? Seven?
Eight. Yeah. Eight. Seven independent, one insider.
You know, if a board is seven or more, and you have everybody come to a committee meeting, you may not get the committee business done. Because everybody asks questions, everybody has a point of view, and you don't get the agenda accomplished. So I found that with boards of less than six or less, you can do that, have everybody come to the committees. But with boards of seven or more, you really are better off keeping the committee structure, you know, set.
So I'll just say as a PS, my experience is different. I think it comes down to who the chair of the committee is. The chair of the committee is like, because
I agree with that.
So, but that's just my PS
stick
on the side. Yeah, but
stick.
You really have to have a strong committee chair. Yeah, I hear you though.
I guess I don't read or hear anything here that suggests we should be trying to fundamentally reallocate work amongst committees and so on. If it's okay and the company's healthy and we don't have any standout governance issues or major changes, then leaving things where they are might be okay. The thing that seems to be on the
table, we got the audit committee who's complaining because they feel like they're the dumping ground for everything.
But if the part that might come off of that relates back to the strategy, the shifts in the market, the investments in the projects, there's a cash flow component of that, there's a time of return of that, there's how is it going to play in the market.
Yep.
And those things, because they seem central to strategic success for the company, ought to be full board issues, and the full board ought to be focused there, and trust some of the other bits and pieces to be taken care of in committee would be my take.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Chris?
Another concept, another construct would be, you know, I personally can say I have nothing to add to cybersecurity,
so any other thoughts? Here's one idea. I mean, we could have the audit committee, of which a couple of you guys are on it. I realize the chair isn't in the room, but we could ask the audit committee to come back and say, realize that we want to keep it the full board, more everything related to strategic decision making, and we want to keep as much process into the audit committee and as well as the regulatory. Are there things that the audit committee wants to recommend that should come off their plate and maybe go back to the full board? I mean, maybe that's the way to approach it. Yeah, Mindy.
I mean, one question that I have is whether the CFO and his or her team is preparing the information appropriately for the audit committee.
Mm.
If
fair comment.
That they have a lot of work, and there be a meeting with them and discuss how the information should be prepared in a better way, or do it a different way, you know, whatever it is, but to try to get some understanding of maybe they could streamline some stuff. Maybe they're not as prompt with information, so they're overwhelming them. I mean, one of the things the audit committee can do, because I think some of the information they just don't have.
Let me exercise my role as timekeeper. You have 15 minutes.
Okay. All right. Let me ask a different question, which is one we dealt with at the end of the last board, and we sort of left it for people to think about, which is that we've got all our financial experts sitting on the audit committee, but the comp committee, and we spent a lot of time at the last board after the comp committee made their report, with there being a lot of concern that the compensation for our management team was not tied as closely to the financial metrics as it needed to be. There needed to be a couple of very specific numbers. Were you expecting me to ask this question?
No. We had a conversation before the start.
And therefore, the question that we were having was, how do we ensure that what is being proposed and what is being used for compensation is really well understood and ties very clearly to the operations, the strategy, the financial operations, and the financial metrics that we talk about at the board meeting?
Help me understand what I'm missing here, because when I look at the numbers, you got seven people. I assume you have three core committees: nominating and governance, compensation, and audit. So if I do the math, there will always be two members of the audit committee that are going to be on the compensation committee.
No, because the people, well, in this particular case, the people who are on audit, where they have a second committee, they don't all have second committees, they sit on non-gov. So it just, in this particular case, there just doesn't seem to, they just, for whatever reason, never ended with an overlap. But I think this is more of a philosophical question, because it's not just about, because one easy answer is we switch two people, right? And
yeah,
that's sort of to your point, right? That just, we move someone from audit on the comp and someone from comp on the audit, right? So that, but I think the bigger question is the philosophical question, which is, you know, comp is dealing with, you know, what do we want as our compensation metrics? And the audit committee is staring at the hard, cold numbers of whatever. And what is being proposed for compensation can be wildly different than what's in the strategy. It can be, and maybe it shouldn't be, but I've never seen them be the same, because usually management wants a room for error, if you will, in their bonus. I don't know what, I'm trying to think of the right words to say it differently. So my question is, based on your experience in your own other companies, how have you seen that work well, and should we be thinking of doing something differently? Yes, Ed.
So because of the public nature of most companies and the fact that the compensation is going to be visible to shareholders and there's going to be a report from the compensation committee to shareholders, I think it's imperative that you have an outside consultant, compensation consultant, who helps the board, you know, with this matter. I think it's the compensation committee's responsibility to formulate the structure of the plan,
mm-hmm.
but it's the full board's responsibility to bless the compensation plan. And I think this is important because the CEO or the management team will go around the comp committee members and go to the other board members, mm-hmm. lobbying them for things that if they don't, the other board members
yep.
don't fully understand, they may get mixed up in communications and so
mm-hmm.
forth. So I think the committee establishes the compensation structure and the compensation metrics using a consultant, presents it to the full board, gets the full board to bless that, and then the compensation committee executes it with the members of the management team.
Has anyone else seen it done differently or would recommend doing it differently, or thoughts? This group is too quiet.
Are you talking, you seem to be indicating that stronger financial expertise would be beneficial for all of us, at least that's where I've been thinking about. Is that your assertion, that we have finance people on audit and then we have people who potentially have less financial expertise on other committees, particularly compensation, and we may be missing some key things?
In fact, I not in our current company, we haven't had that problem, but I saw that in a different company, and so I'm very sensitive about it here because we have the same structure where you've got, you know, the people really divvied up, and some things fell through the cracks. And so you had the plans, the compensation plans designed in such a way, I mean, the numbers were very clear. It's just that when you actually saw the practical outlay, it drove very different decisions than what the assumption was, right? And the numbers actually didn't, the way the numbers got interpreted was very different than what somebody with a financial background would have interpreted the numbers, said differently.
So simplistically, I think everybody manages to their incentives. And if the incentives aren't as they should be, or as we seek and we desire based upon the outputs or the performance we're seeking, we need to change that. So if that's the fundamental issue, then we need to change the incentives to mirror the outcomes that we are all striving for. And however we want to go about doing that, structurally, committee-wise, otherwise, I'm open. But we need to fundamentally focus on what are the incentives that we're trying to manage towards based upon the outcomes we're seeking. And are they the desired outcomes? And if not, then we need to change our incentives.
Okay. All right. So this is helpful. So I think our last item, that's again a process thing, is we're now required by ISS to disclose all our education and training that we do. So we're a public company. We've got to disclose it. ISS is starting to report out and actually suggest voting against board members who haven't been following up or keeping up with their proper education and training for being on public companies. So I guess my question to the board is that there's been a suggestion that we have some industry experts come in once or twice a year and speak to us at a dinner, which would be considered education. So that was made at the last board meeting, so we're thinking about that. But in addition, what other things, you know, some of you all still work full-time as well as doing this board. Others are full-time board members. What do you think is reasonable? Because we clearly have to think about putting in a minimum standard for our board directors, and we're going to be very public with it. It's actually going to be in our proxy. So what do you guys think?
I think it'd be worth having a structured program. Partly because of what you just said, it's going to be in our pride, something that we can lean on so that our shareholders can have some confidence that we're not only know what we're doing, but that we've been trained to hopefully know what we're doing in the future. And I think that if we all get the same level of training, that doesn't make me a financial expert.
Not at all. Yeah.
But we're all on the same level. We understand what our requirements are. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to go on the audit committee, but I'll be able to better able to understand what's coming from the audit committee, and I think that that's really important.
Yep.
For
the board. Well, the education can take a lot of forms, like some of the industry information, you know, is education. It's just a different form of education, so it doesn't have to be just financial education.
We talked before about the risk management areas. I think, again, that's something that, because of the evolution that we're seeing in technology, that it's important that we all get primers, maybe annual, at least, you know, twice, once every 2 years.
Yep.
So we can stay abreast of what's happening in the technology, and I think it's really important that we're all getting the same information so that when we're addressing concerns from management, we can all be talking from the same base level of knowledge.
Okay.
Yeah, there's probably topical things, whether it's diversity, sexual harassment, other issues that could be threatening us that we should be trained on and be well informed on to make sure we're ahead of the curve. So it goes well beyond just the financial
Yep.
prowess, but I think there's other topical things that if it's truly going to be broadcast and published, what we're being turned on, we're covering all bases of potential risk, cyber and otherwise.
Yeah, yeah, Chris?
One personal request that I would have is that maybe at the dinner, you know, instructional time, we have some items that are more digestible than others.
You don't want to do cybersecurity and over dessert one night? Well, you know, a lot of brandy could go down with the cyber, right? I'm sorry, Mary Ann.
There's a lot of certification programs. Does that
there are.
Count if,
yes.
if various board members, if you have a criteria that people have to continue and go for certification, does that count for the companies?
Yes, that does. It absolutely does. And that's a question maybe for the board is, do we want to require of our directors that over, whether it's over a 2-year period or 3-year, that they get certified? And it could be, there are some wonderful groups in addition to NACD. There's American College of Corporate Directors, to name another one, have great certification programs. So do we want to think about that? I mean, I think there are... I don't know how much time everyone is willing to give, realizing that it's, again, some of you are still working full time.
But so. People are getting paid, right?
They are getting
and
paid.
And getting paid for their time, and this is a way that they have the same base knowledge that
That's
you wouldn't
right.
have to do that at dinners.
So we want to think, are you guys willing to think about a going through a certification program?
I would, to second what Brian was saying, I think that there are a series of topical areas that would benefit us all. I'd like
okay.
to figure out what are the key topical areas,
yeah.
prioritize them, and then figure out then how do we best get the education. It might be somebody talking to us at dinner, it might be a certification program, but it would be useful so that we understand what's coming at us and what time period.
What would be your top three?
Just
thinking off the top, realizing we're all going to take time and think
so,
about it.
Having a marketing background, I'm very concerned with the market outlook. So understanding where the market is going and what it's going to look like in the next 18 months, and then farther than that gets harder. But that one to me is critical because the financial aspects. I think another one is around enterprise risk, and I would put cyber in there. But we don't need to be CISOs in order to understand what it is. We just need to have a picture of what the high level
mm-hmm.
enterprise risk is. And then I think the third one around diversity and inclusion and all the HR related stuff, because that world is changing very rapidly as well. Those would be my top three.
Any other thoughts,
yeah,
priorities?
Just to hit on that, because you mentioned the enterprise risk. We also talked about it more moving to the Internet of Things, getting more into software, the whole platform of the business is changing, which totally changes the risk profile of cranking out widgets. That's where they were versus where they're going.
Yeah.
I think there's a big risk in that.
Larry.
You know, my view is that it's the role of the Nominating Governance Committee to ensure a talented board and an educated board.
Mm-hmm.
And I would submit that the Nominating Governance Committee should get together with the CEO and the chairman of the board and each year come up with a list of topics that this board needs to know over the next 12 months. And that some third party, not the CEO, but a third party, maybe, oh, board options, let's say, be designated to find best of breed education, podcasts, articles, Harvard cases, in those areas that the Nominating Governance has, and then send it electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And then when a board member then clicks on to read it, it's counted. In other words, if somebody's going to, if you get the article and you don't read it, you're not going to get any credit. But if you get the article and you read it.
What if you open it and don't read it?
Okay, that.
Sorry.
You know, again, what's done in continuing education courses.
But I love the idea. I think if I could just, because I'm watching time, when I think about this, I think the point, though, Larry, that you made, which I would recommend we adopt, is let's have the non-gov come up with a list of topics. And that they can recommend to us, and then if they're, we can prioritize them, and then figure out whether or not we need to have dinner conversations, whether it's articles, and they can, once we have the list of topics, recommend the process.
And I think it's very, I think it's very
it's a good
important
way process.
That who is the chief education officer for the board of directors?
Yeah.
Because if there is no designated chief education officer of the board,
right.
By default, it becomes the CEO.
Yeah.
If the CEO is going to be educating the board about what it needs to know, what's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. Yeah.
One final thing, Ellen. And maybe this ties to it, but you brought up a number of topics, and I'm concerned that there might not be alignment on the board. Because we talked about the strategic plan, which we really haven't got yet.
Yeah.
But yet we've talked about the comp committee, so the comp might be tied to a program that's not directly tied. And then we talked about audit, and we brought up a couple issues here. Code of ethics, whistleblowing, segregation of duties, all those things, which kind of, okay, could we be cheating to get to the numbers, which may be out of alignment with this? Because we've set up a dynamic of pushing people to get to something that isn't aligned with the strategy.
So the way, I know we're at 6 o'clock. So just to kind of give you a sense for this isn't, what I just did wasn't as crazy as it may seem like it is that for my larger public boards, they truly go through, it's either 1 or 2 hours before the board meeting officially starts. And depending on what's on the table, it can be longer, it can be shorter. And we really go around the room. Now remember, there's only 7 people, right? It's half the number of people. We've all read the materials. We've all actually been together now for a while. We all come wildly from different viewpoints when we look at them. And so it's the 1 or 2 top things that concerned you about, either what you've read, what you know about the industry, what you think we need to focus on for the next 2 days. Maybe it's what we need to think about for the next year or two, but it's sort of kind of, everybody hears what everyone else is concerned about. And all what it does is that you end up with a mix of views, right? If there's anything that isn't already going to be discussed over the next 2 days at the board meeting, then the chairman clearly reaches out to the CEO and makes sure that whatever the topic is covered. 98% of the time, the topic's already on there. It's just a question of driving the focus more than the, it's very rare that a topic isn't already on the list, right? Because, and then the last, the executive committee at the end, there's private time with the CEO at the end as well as at the beginning, and then there's time for just the independent directors. And, we stay for as long as we need. If we need 1 hour, we 1 hour. If it's 3 hours, it's 3 hours. And, sometimes it's been firing the CEO. Other times it's things have been going well, or maybe it's the industry issue versus how the company is performing, per se. But it gels nicely from the start to the end because it sort of sets the stage, makes sure we're all kind of thinking or listening to what not just our concerns are, but understanding where other people are coming from. And then it gets wrapped at the end because then we're trying to cover it. And it actually gels very nicely. In a board setting, right? But we've always got the materials a week in advance. The materials are the highlight, and then there's tons of stuff in the appendix. So if you're a crazy person like I am with the numbers, you're into the weeds. If you really are not, you're looking at the reviews. Does that answer? I don't know if that answers your question or if that. It phrases
it
differently.
It talks about the process. But just in reading the case, some of the issues raised, it seemed like there was a risk of disconnect.
Yeah. So the other thing I brought, if anyone's interested, as a handout, is I did last year a segment on looking through the financial lens of topics facing all directors, which is not intended for. And it just really lays out sort of business red flags, financial red flags, and then some thoughts on audit committee versus full board. And there's no right answer here, but if you're interested, it's just a takeaway.
Can you want to circle it
around? Yeah, it's just a takeaway.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Ellen. I'd like to mention this month we decided we were not going to compete with Halloween, and next month we are also going to be deciding not to compete with Thanksgiving. So our next meeting is going to be on the 21st of November. The case that we're going to be dealing with is going to be a much more tactical case that is close to your hearts. And the case is you've just joined the board of a company and the CFO tells you the D&O insurance is adequate.
Inadequate?
Inadequate.
Inadequate.
And your question is, how adequate is adequate?
Time to get off the board.
What's going on in the, director officer liability area that I don't know about that I need to know, and that will be the focus of the case. So hope to see you on the 21st of November. Please do not come the last Thursday of the month.
Your family will be angry with you.
Well, and then, but in December you got a problem because it's in the Christmas holiday, right?
Right. Yeah, we don't.
You don't do December.
Oh, no,
we don't do December.
Yeah. Christmas, we've given up. We don't even have anything in December.
People have said, why don't we have a Christmas party?
It was sort of different.